when I'm watching my kids inside the house, I have the treadmill, and because it can go up to steeper grades, I can strap my kids on, and then I can hike uphill. And
Diz Runs Radio, episode 452, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that today's episode of the show is once again sponsored by my friends over at runningshoesguru.com, which is basically, I mean, your best spot to get all the newest reviews and honest feedback. You know, not just people shilling the line from whatever, you know, the shoe manufacturer had to say, but actually, you know, people that have run in them and are very willing and very open and honest about the goods, the bads, and the in-betweens about whatever particular model of shoe that they may be wearing. This week is a giveaway week at runningshoesguru.com. Every month they do a drawing for a free pair of shoes. And this month the shoes are a new pair of the Saucony Ride 10s. So if that's your kind of shoe, head over to runningshoesguru.com/giveaways. Get yourself entered and good luck. Hey guys, my guest today is someone that knows a thing or two about racing hard and finishing at or near the front of the pack, even in some of the biggest races against some of the best runners in the world. He also knows what it's like to balance his racing and his training with a demanding job, all while still making sure to spend enough quality time with his family. To be honest, I'm not exactly sure how he does it, but hopefully we can all learn a few tricks of the trade along the way today. So anyway, I'm looking forward to trying to keep up over the next few miles with Mr. Kyle Pietari. Thanks for joining us today, Kyle, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Denny. I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to talking with you.
Yeah, the pleasure is certainly mine. It's something we've been on and off trying to line up for a while, and I'm glad we're finally able to make it happen, which not everybody knows, but almost didn't happen. But that's a story for another day. So, guys, if you want to connect with Kyle and find him on social media and follow along with some of the things he's got going on the Twitter, you can connect with him there, and the handle is just his name, basically. It's at Kyle Pietari, and let me spell that for you. P-I-E-T-A-R-Y. R-I. Sorry, I almost said Y there, and that's not right. So Kyle Pietari. And then on Instagram, it's at KSP303. And as per usual, we'll have those links in the show notes, so you don't have to try to remember. You don't have to try to guess on the spelling if you're not somewhere where you can write it down right now. Just head over to the show notes for this episode, and you can find the links there at dizruns.com/452. So, Kyle, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a pretty simple and straightforward answer, and sometimes it's a little bit crazy, and a lot of times for the ultra runners, it's really a crazy answer, or it's at least a layered answer, maybe is a better way of saying it. But the question is simple, and here it is. What is your favorite distance to race, and why?
Well, Denny, I'll take your offer to give a layered answer, if it was an offer. And I'll say it's the 100 miler for sure, but not just any 100 miler. It's got to be a mountainous 100 miler that has runnable downhills.
Okay,
so that's my favorite distance race.
Okay, so you're making it hard enough on, like, the harder the better, basically. Although the runnable downhills maybe makes it a little bit easier because some of those real steep descents are tough. But why do you like that type of distance and that type of terrain?
So 100 miler is very different from all the distances shorter than it that I've run. I've done 100K, 50 miler, and I guess everything shorter than that. But at the 100 miler, end up getting into a very different mental state from anything I've experienced in shorter distances. And also there's the fact that even at the 50 miler, I have to run pretty hard the whole time, feel like I'm really pushing myself, whereas at the 100 miler, it's completely different in that if I ever feel like I'm really pushing myself, that means I'm going too hard. So instead of racing hard, you're racing easy to race hard. And I like running at a more comfortable pace just in general. So 100 miler suits me really well.
there's so many things. I think for any of us that have never done anything remotely to 100 miles. So my longest and most recent race was a 50, you know, 50K-ish. I think it ended up being about 33 miles, which, you know, in the ultra world, that whatever the title of distance is, it's just kind of an area code. You're close to that distance. But, 50K was certainly long enough for me. And I can't even begin to wrap my head around the idea of, like, I'm gonna run or race a 100 miler. And then to hear you say that, I like that distance because it's a pretty easy pace, and I don't like to race as hard. It's just mind blowing to me of the idea of going that far and using the adjective of easy at any point to describe anything about 100 miles. But it's just a testament to you, distance runners and ultra runners and ultra racers. Just how impressive that is. How did you get into long distance? I'm going to assume maybe that running has been part of your life for a while, but maybe let's start there instead. Has running always been part of your life, or how did you get into the running world?
Yeah, I got into running first in middle school, just cross country and track, and then that was up through 10th grade, and then really 11th grade through college. I was just kind of an on and off recreational runner, constantly hurting myself, trying to go in and just run every single workout as hard as I possibly could, because that was what I was trained to do as a middle school and high school cross country runner, and didn't work out. And I didn't have the discipline, the organization. I think organization is key to find consistency with it. And I kept getting hurt. And then after college, I told myself, no matter what, I'm going to make this part of my life, because it's something that I knew that I loved, but I couldn't find the feelings of love for it. But so I knew that if I could make it part of my life, I would. And I read Born to Run, and I met people who were ultra runners, and I was really fascinated with it. The idea of going like a marathon had always been kind of completely insane to me. And then all of a sudden I heard there are people going longer than that. So after college, I made a very deliberate effort to ingrain it into my life. And I really haven't looked back since. And that was really the start of 2011. So it's now been, I guess, 6.5 years that I've been a consistent runner.
Wow. And quite successful in those 6.5 years. Just pulled up the ultra sign up results here, and lots of top 10, especially at, like I mentioned in the beginning there, big races, Leadville, Western States. You're right in the top of the pack there in some of these big races, and some top finishes and some shorter stuff, some 60 milers and 30 milers and things like that. So very successful in a short time. Like you said, you were dealing with some injuries. You were kind of on again, off again before you really committed to it. For lack of a better way of asking it, how did you go from on again, off again runner a handful of years ago, five, six years ago, to somebody who's competing for wins at some of these most prestigious races in the world? Like, I mean, was the ascent that quickly, or I don't know, is there a secret, is the right way of asking it? But like, I mean, a lot of people, it takes a little while of consistent running and training to get to that point, and you've seemingly done it pretty quickly. Is there a thing you can point to, or am I just grasping at a straw that isn't there?
Yeah, so a few points here. The first is that it's been a pretty consistent trajectory for me. When I first got back into it in early 2011, I was at a point where running 3.5 miles at, say, 8:30 pace was a big deal. And I couldn't do that every single day of the week without risking hurting myself. I was really at square one. And I had no idea that I would be even capable, let alone pretty good at going at ultra distances. But so I was at square one, and like I said, having the organization and the discipline to find consistency was the first step I had to take. And I think psychology plays a huge role in running in general, but also in finding consistency specifically. And for me, I had to find a way to force myself to run on a regular basis. So what I did was I took a paper route I moved to Duluth, Minnesota, one of the coldest places in the United States, and it was January, and I got a paper route. So I was making like less than $200 a week to get up and spend like 3 hours delivering papers when it was often 20 degrees below zero. And it was in the dark because I would start at like 3:30 a.m. And I would just run, jog, walk my route, or most of it anyway, and go back to the car, crank the heater up, drive 2 blocks to the next stop point, pick up a bunch of papers, and then go deliver them. So I was starting to get somewhere between like 3 and 6 miles in a day, and I had to do this 7 days a week. It was by far the hardest work I've ever done for the lowest pay. But it was awesome because I was able to really focus on running. And so having something that forced me to go do it every day was the secret. And after I had a few months of regular running, I started to get faster and fitter. And really, once you clear that first hurdle, it gets so much easier to stick with it. At least it always has for me. Yeah, so I really think the hardest part is getting sort of into shape. And then once you're there, it just gets more and more fun because it's easier. You can go faster. You can go longer. You can find more adventures with it, do more races. And it was later that year that after a little over four months of the paper route, I was able to quit and I moved to Colorado, where trail running and ultra running is much more of a known thing. And I had my first experiences with mountain trail running. And then that October, I did my first ultra and kind of had some more or less consistent trajectory getting better and more capable since then.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of folks, and especially a lot of us that are you know, kind of in that recreational, but we're still a little bit competitive. We're going to compete with ourselves. You know, we may not be lining up at the start of the race thinking that we're going to really have a chance to win it, but you know, you're shooting for a PR, you're shooting for a time goal, whatever it is. I think that consistency thing is I don't know. For me, it took a while. It took many attempts, maybe just of a way of saying it, to really dial in and recognize that it's not always all about the long run, or it's not always all about the speed workout or the tempo run or whatever, or doing the hill repeats, but it's about showing up on a regular basis, whatever that is, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever fits your schedule and your lifestyle and what works for you. But being consistent week after week, month after month, really, really makes a difference. You also talked about the mindset piece or some of the psychology that goes into it. How has that played into your, and you talked about it being a little bit related to the consistency. How do those go hand in hand for you?
Yeah, so I'm not going to claim to have it all figured out in terms of how to stay consistent and how to motivate myself and how to find time for it is the main thing, because I'm busier than I've ever been before in my life now. I have 3 kids, ages 3 and under, and I work a lot. And since I had that first experience running as part of a job, I started thinking, well, how else can I force myself to run when I'm no longer doing this 7 days a week, 3:30 to 6 a.m. in the freezing cold, snow-covered streets?
All for a couple $100, you know?
Yeah. So I started thinking, well, if the more I can travel and on foot, use running for transportation, the more running I can fit into my schedule. And I'm somebody who tries to avoid driving when I can, partially for the benefits of saving gas and reducing carbon emissions, saving money on gas as well. And also, driving is one of the more dangerous things you do in your day-to-day life. So for all these reasons, I was like, the more I can run and the less I can drive or be in a car, the better. So I started running for my commutes in various jobs I've had since then. And then I went to law school, and all through law school, I commuted on foot. The distance varied because I moved at one point, but whatever it is, even if it's less than a mile, once you get your running shoes on, put on your running clothes, get in the mindset of I'm going for a run, once you get started, then you can add on a little bit, and that's easier, and that takes less motivation, less planning. You can literally add on an extra mile, and if that mile takes you 9 minutes, it literally only took you 9 minutes out of your day to get an extra mile once you're already there.
That's an interesting way of saying it, and something I never thought of before, but you're right, because that first mile, if you're only going to run 1 mile and it's going to take you 9 minutes, it's probably going to take you 15 or 20 by the time you change clothes and you get your shoes on and you know set your Garmin or your watch or whatever. Like, it takes a little while, and that second mile, it's just the time of run. So that's, something I never thought of, but that makes a whole lot of sense when you think about it for just a second.
Absolutely. So, and often I get into a habit where I literally take the most direct possible route from point A to point B, and then I do it on autopilot when I run the same route in each direction over and over and over. But then if I get motivated or excited about a race or something and I need to get more training in, then it's easier to add on more. But yeah, just getting out the door is really the key for me. If there is a key to running in general.
Right. I would love to talk a little bit about the idea of run commuting, because it's something that I've thought of a couple times, and now I'm getting to the point where I'm pretty much exclusively working from home. So the opportunity for a run commute isn't quite the same when you're running from the living room to the office, as opposed to when you're actually, when the office is literally, around the wall of your house. But for people that are listening and that are maybe, everybody that's listening here is busy in their own right. I mean, that's the most common complaint I get from people that I interact with, people I coach, whatever the case might be, that, there's just sometimes not enough hours in the day to do everything they want to do, plus get all the training they want to do, plus, work and family and this and that and the other. So if you're going to run commute, the thing that's always been in my mind is the biggest obstacle is, you get to work and now, if it's remotely hot or like I live in Florida, so it's hot and humid, 10 months of the year. You get to the office and you're a little bit on the gross side. Like that's maybe not acceptable, but I know that, I mean, like you said, you went to law school, you're in the law profession. That, to me, in my mind, that's the kind of thing that you kind of got to show up in your suit and tie and looking pretty professional most of the time. How do you get around that? And for somebody who's maybe has that same impression that I have, that maybe hasn't thought of opportunities to get around how to make that work, How does that work out for you on the times that you're able to run commute?
Yeah, so I'll say I've been refining my techniques over the years, and I've done everything. I've run with a suit jacket very carefully rolled up and stuffed into my backpack. I've run with laptops more times than I could count. I've run in a suit. I've run just in business casual clothes many times. Right now, I have the best system I've ever had in that I just keep my entire professional wardrobe at the office, and there's a place I can shower here. So that's ideal, and then I can just rotate out my entire wardrobe, wash it all, and then bring it back. But I haven't had such a nice setup for all that long compared to how long I've actually been run commuting. So I'll say that I totally understand the hot and sweaty thing, because I went to law school at Harvard, and Boston and Cambridge is, it's right next to the ocean. It's not Florida, but it's humid there, and it does get hot. And I often, the vast majority of days, I would show up to class wearing, you could say, business casual attire, and I wouldn't shower. So I think you have to kind of get comfortable with keeping your pace slow enough that you don't get as sweaty, or just towel off in a bathroom stall. I've done that many, many, many times. And ultimately, people sweat. If you're just sitting around working at your desk, if I'm really focused on a piece of writing I'm working on, I might get some adrenaline, get a little bit sweaty, and ultimately, I don't think sweat is all that big of a deal. If you can kind of get past it and just accept that it'll dry and be gone. Various cosmetic products might come in handy. And I exclusively use wool socks for commuting, because if you're just going to have them sitting there hidden under your desk so other people won't see them, wool socks are by far the least smelly, and I highly recommend using wool. So that's one thing I've learned.
good little tip there.
That I'd like to share.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate that. So you know, it's one thing for you as the run commuter to be comfortable with being a little bit on the sweaty side and you know, just those dynamics. But what about the other folks in the office? I mean, do you get a lot of pushback from them? Or I mean, obviously every workplace is going to be a little bit different and some places will be more forgiving, more understanding than others might be. But how is that side of the equation balanced out over your experience of time doing that?
Yeah, so I think it could depend on who you're around, where you're with. I'm lucky I'm here in Denver, and in Colorado, if you're wearing running clothes or cycling clothes, that's extremely accepted. So you know, I show up in my short shorts and then I go put on my professional attire and I don't think anybody takes issue with that. And I think making an effort to clean up the best you can is a good idea. I don't know. I can't really speak to other people's situations as well as my own. But in my own experience, for the most part, you know, we're at a time in history when more or less people are almost always going to respect somebody who's fitting in their healthy lifestyle habits. And you know, if somebody thought it was a bad thing that I was a daily runner or that I'm running for my commute, then I probably try not to care so much about what that person thinks. But I'm yet to encounter anybody who's expressed those sentiments.
Right. And I suppose there's always that time when, like, if you really have something that, you know, like you need to be dressed to the nines for and super professional that day, like you just don't run that day, or you run early enough that you can get home and shower and then, you know, drive to the office if you have to. So you got to be a little bit flexible. But yeah, for the most part, you know, if you know you're a heavy sweater, like, you know, plan to get to the office an extra 20 minutes early so you can cool down a little bit. And like you said, wipe down, take a little washcloth bath in the bathroom if you need to, and you know, make it work. And, you know,
yeah, it's all about just making it work. And I've had a lot of different situations, different offices, different situations.
Right.
And I've still kept run commuting through all of it. And I never will regret having done any of that.
Excellent. Before we continue, Kyle, just want to remind everybody that today's episode of the show is sponsored by runningshoesguru.com. Basically, in my opinion, the best resource on the web today to find out honest reviews, honest feedback, about literally hundreds of different types of shoes. So if you have a running shoe question, there's no better resource that I'm aware of than runningshoesguru.com. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, but not too far off the beaten path of trying to balance the training and the running with all the other things going on. I don't know how public this is, so I don't want to say to, and if we need to edit this out, just let me know. But I know you had posted a photo in the Ultra group that we're in, with a picture of you on a treadmill with, I think, one child on your back in a backpack, and I think maybe a little one in a carrier on your front. How do you, I mean, that's one way, I guess, of balancing time with the family while also getting some fitness in. Is that type of thing a regular occurrence in your household, or you know, and whether or not it is, how does balancing being a dad and a spouse with your family life and running, how does that road intersect for you?
Yeah, I'm glad you're shifting the conversation here, because run commuting is just one aspect of making it a lifestyle thing, and family, and especially having small kids, is another key aspect for me. So just the general principle is always trying to figure out how I can fit in more miles, more minutes of running into my life with these other things that are absolutely priorities. So having a treadmill is key for me, for sure. And yeah, it is a regular thing. And I'm really excited to actually share that aspect of my life with anybody who's interested. And quick disclosure statement, I'm officially a product tester for Nordic Track. So I have the incline treadmill that they make, and as a mountain racer, having one that can go above 15% grade is pretty key for me for training. And so the treadmill I have can go up to 40% grade and everything lower. And 40% is just insane. I can't use it. Really,
I mean, at 40%, that's almost crawl up. I mean, isn't it? Like, I mean, that's not even power hike, really, is it?
Yeah, it's like take slow steps and you're like fully hunched over so that you don't like slide off. so like 30% is great, but anyway, being able to use the treadmill with my kids at the same time. So when I'm doing some parenting, which my wife absolutely does the vast majority of the parenting because I'm really busy with work these days. But trying to fit in as much as I can when I have the time, when I'm not working, trying to focus on parenting as much as I can is really important to me. And if I want to get in some training while I'm doing that, I have two options. One of them is the jogging stroller. And I would estimate I've logged about 1,000 miles on my double jogging stroller. And a lot of that was through really traffic, like the traffic in Boston, I would argue, is the worst anywhere in the United States, just because the roads are windy and crazy. So driving in Boston is a nightmare. And being on some of these crazy streets with a double jogging stroller with two, you know, kids/babies, can get a little bit sketchy sometimes, but I made it work. And I got a lot of miles while I was there. And here in Denver, it's way better. I have much better places to run with kids. So I do that a lot. I can take them to the playground, stop and do a workout there maybe, and then run back home. So getting back to inside the house, when I'm watching my kids inside the house, I have the treadmill. And because it can go up to steeper grades, I can strap my kids on. And then I can hike uphill, and power hiking is central to training and racing mountain 100 milers. And so it actually translates well to preparation for what I'm actually training for. And then I can be hanging out with my kids, chit chat with them while I'm sweating profusely and getting a really hard workout.
Do they seem to enjoy it for the most part?
Yeah, I'm yet to have any of my kids ask to stop while I'm wearing them and doing some power hike training. And it's always me saying, okay, I'm actually done because my workout's really hard because it's a lot of weight and going up the steeper grades is just a hard workout. So I'm yet to have them ask to get off, but also I'll take turns doing intervals with them. So maybe I'll stand on with my foot on each side of the belt, and I have my two toddlers. One is almost 2 years old. The other is 3.5. They love hopping on. So I'll hold their hands while they're walking more or less in between my legs and going up the steep grade. And then they go until they're completely gassed, and then they get off. And then 2 minutes later, they want to get back on. Right. So it's a fun activity to do with them too, and maybe I don't know, maybe I'm instilling some passion for hard interval training in them at an early age. We'll see though.
But if nothing else, it'll give them a story to tell for forever of, you know, my dad made me, you know, sit in the back of the on the carrier while we were, you know, on the treadmill, and then do the, you know, even if they're enjoying it, you know, it can always be spun later about, you know, my dad, the crazy runner, and making me do all this stuff on the treadmill when I could barely walk and I can't even remember really. And it'll lead for some good stories down the road for sure. So shifting gears a little bit to some of the racing stuff you've done and Like I said earlier, I mean, you've had success, and one thing I want to at least touch on, and we'll see how long this goes in this area, but you ran Western States this year, and you finished in 10th, so you're guaranteed to be able to go back next year. Kind of one of the stories, one of the things that caught my attention was that you had a little injury early. I think it was mile 7, mile 8, something like that. You rolled your ankle, and I remember the post that you had put up, you know, shortly after, the day or two after the race, was that you weren't sure if it was broken or not, yet you continued to keep going another 92, 93 miles to get to the finish on what may or may not have been a broken ankle. And it turns out that it wasn't, but still painful, not a whole lot of fun. Why? I mean, I get somewhat the idea of, man, I trained for this thing. I really want to run well. I want to represent the you know, the people that have supported me and this and that and the other and have a good showing here. But at the same time, like, the race is going to hurt bad enough if you have two good legs and two good ankles the whole entire way. So what was the drive for you to keep going, even when you had probably as good of a excuse as anybody to maybe think about throwing in the towel early that day?
Yeah, so Western States this year was, in some ways, the craziest race I've ever done. And as you said, it was early in the race that I had a mishap. And it turns out I got a pretty bad sprain. And I've never sprained an ankle before in my entire life. And I grew up playing tons of soccer fairly competitively and been trail running for a while. And so this year, Western States, the first 14 miles or so was largely running on snow. And up in the high country there are a lot of streams, and the streams all have pretty high flow right now because there's so much snow melt. So it was barely running a lot of it. It was just stepping, tiptoeing, hopping along, trying not to fall. And I probably fell at least a dozen times in the first 6 miles. I'm not exaggerating, before I hurt myself. And then it was mile 6.9. There was a stream with a nice smooth round rock sticking up. So I took a nice step, hop sort of, and just hit the rock wrong, apparently, and rolled my ankle. And I roll my ankles all the time trail running. That's part of the sport. Right. But I've never had one this bad before. So all of a sudden, it felt different from any other ankle roll I've had, and it didn't seem to ease. And I was just walking on it for a while. I didn't want to stop. I was so jazzed up, so much adrenaline. I was the fittest I've ever been in my entire life. I'm at mile, not even the 7 mile mark of the premier 100 miler in the world. And I know that I'm in shape to do really well. There's a lot of reasons why I was really excited, and anyway, I feel that something's off, and I didn't really know what to do other than just keep moving forward. And I remembered from reading Scott Jurek's book, Eat and Run, that he tore some ligaments in his ankle or something comparable early on in Western States one year, and then he went on to win it. And that recollection from reading his book was absolutely the deciding factor for me. I don't think I would have continued running if I hadn't read that.
Were there moments along the way when you started to question it? Because again, at that early, I mean, I could see maybe like, I'm going to try it out and see how it goes. Did it get bad enough where the thought of dropping ever crossed your mind, or was that just not even part of the psyche at all?
Yeah, right away, I had this wave of disappointment wash over me that I'm either going to drop out or I'm going to be forced to stop before the finish line, or if I somehow could miraculously make it to the finish line, I'm not going to get top 10, which was always my goal. And it didn't stop hurting. Every single step, the entire rest of the race for it was over 93 miles. Every single step was painful, but the pain never got too bad to where I couldn't still move decently. So I just didn't let myself entertain the thought of dropping out for any more than like a fleeting second here and there. If it come into my mind, I would just immediately push it out.
Right. Impossible question. And I fully recognize that this is an impossible question, but if that didn't happen, if you didn't sprain your ankle, do you think you'd do better than 10th this year, or was that about where you were probably going to be regardless?
There's no way of knowing what would have happened. There's so many factors in a 100 miler. Like, for example, I still felt completely trashed in all regards by the finish line. But it's unquestionable that I went a lot slower than I would have if I hadn't sprained my ankle, assuming nothing else really went wrong. And I'm going to say it probably cost me over an hour. And I mean, you can look up the finish places and take some guesses at what that would have meant. But really, my goal was top 10. And so throughout the entire race, I was fighting to get to that 10th place spot. And it wasn't until Hal Kerner, as the aid station captain at the mile, I believe it was 90 aid station, confirmed for me that I was in 10th place. And I knew I had a good gap on the person behind me. So at that point, I was able to relax a little bit mentally, which took away some of the adrenaline. So my ankle started to really hurt at that point. And of course, I was completely trashed in other ways as well. But then I took it pretty slow the rest of the way, except for at mile 97 or so, whatever it is, No Hands Bridge. I thought I had a huge gap on 11th place. And then I look back and just as starting to cross the bridge as I got across, it was TOEFL from Spain. Mm. So he's like a minute behind me with 3.5 miles to go. And I was in 10th place and I had gone through all this pain and suffering to try and get into 10th. And I had no interest in doing better than 10th. So once I realized I was in 10th, I was like, I don't want first place. I don't want fifth mm-hmm. place. I don't want ninth place. I just want to be able to say I got 10th place with this sprained ankle. So then with 3 miles to go, all of a sudden it's a race to the finish. And I went from being in a lot of pain and going like 12-minute miles to running like 8-minute miles up a pretty steep hill. And the adrenaline was enough that I could like feel my ankle hurting, but it just didn't bother me.
Yeah,
but there were other things that went wrong too that also evidenced that I was slowed down a lot by it. Like I couldn't actually take steps up with my right leg by late in the race because my right hip was completely destroyed from favoring my right leg on all the downhills. So every time I had to step up onto a rock going uphill, I had to use my left leg because my right hip was just literally not functioning by the end of the race. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm still recovering from that.
Oh, I'm sure there's you know, like I said, I've never done a 100. I used to say I have no desire. I can't say I have a desire yet, but the door is opening a crack from talking to some of you crazy people that making me think that maybe someday, you know, if I don't know. I don't know what it'll take, but I'm no longer saying never. You know, I've learned to never say never. But
do it. Just go register for one.
You're not helping anything, Kyle. You're not helping at all.
Go to Ultra sign up one and then see what happens.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to be trashed, like you said, no matter what. And there's no way of knowing, you know, if you don't fall there, you know, there's no way of knowing what could have happened. But that's why I said I knew it was an impossible question, but it's just something to think about. And it's amazing what a little shot of adrenaline will do for you. You know, you think you're sitting pretty and pretty comfortable, and all of a sudden you see the guy coming behind you and you're able to crank it up. The body is able to do amazing things. Another question, and it can be about Western States. It can be about any of these races that you're in. But when you're at the starting line of a race and you know, and maybe it is about Western States, you know that you're fit, you're as fit as you've ever been. You're ready to go and see what happens. What is your mindset like at the start of a race when, you know, arguably whether it's winning, whether it's podium finishing, whether it's top 10, I mean, all those things are realistic opportunities for you, depending on how the race shakes out. What's your mindset like going in, you know, being in that situation at the start of a race?
Oh, well, it's really changed over time. So my first couple hundred milers, there was a lot of fear. And I think that's how it should be. It's a healthy dose of fear. It should always be there at 100 milers. So I might, at this point, I've completed 7 of them. And I don't know, honestly, I don't know anybody else who's ever said that they've completed 7 in all, and literally every single one went well. I do have one DNF to my name when I was out of shape and I dropped a mile 50 of a 100 miler. But I really hadn't been running much before that. And I just went for it anyway, but all 7 of my finishes honestly went pretty well. And I think a lot of that is luck, but definitely having that healthy dose of fear helps with that. And so your question was what goes through the
yeah,
mind?
Kind of, yeah. What's your mindset like at the start of a race when you're competing with the best in the world?
Yeah. So I think that not setting too high of expectations competitively has been paradoxically helpful for me competitively. And that goes back to the 100 miler just being so different from the shorter distances, to where you have to not be running hard in order to do well for the most part. And I guess that as I've had better and better race results, I'm getting more confident in what I think I can do finish time and place wise. But along with that, that gets offset by this renewed fear that I'm going to finally have a terrible 100 miler, even when I'm well trained, and things are going to go wrong. So ultimately, the point I'm making here is that whether it's from fear of what you're facing, in that it's just sounds completely impossible, to fear of I'm going to actually blow up because I'm starting to get really maybe overconfident. Having something like that has been helpful for me. And there's always some element of fear, and that keeps me probably more in the state of mind that I should be in, which is don't go too hard.
is it difficult to? So this year at Western States, you know, anybody who followed the race knows that Jim went out like a freaking bat out of hell and was going hard from the get go. Was it tough to let him go, or was it just like, hey, that's like, I have to do what I like? How difficult is it when somebody else at the front of the field does something that doesn't work, mesh with your plan? How tough is it for you to stick with? This is what I know I need to do. This is what I'm trained. You know, this is how my training has gone. This is what I'm like. Is that a difficult thing to do, or for you, is it easy to just be like, hey, you know, if you can do it, do it, and more power to you. But I got to do what I have to do. How difficult is that for you?
Yeah, when it's someone like Jim Walmsley, it's not difficult at all. It never once crossed my mind that maybe I should do anything differently based on what he's doing. There's no, really no comparison between my ability and his ability. I don't want any listener to think that
right.
there's any valid comparison there. So that wasn't an issue in any way, shape, or form. With other runners who I might be more likely to think that I can compete with, I guess it's a little bit of an issue, but for the most part, I'm consistently pretty good at running my own race in 100 milers and keeping it at a smart pace. And I'll just go back to what I said before. Part of that is fear that something is going to go terribly wrong, because you know, at the highest levels of the sport of ultra running, there's a really high failure rate. And you know, Jim Walmsley is
right.
one of the best examples we've had of that in a while. And there's no question that if he just aimed to win the race, he probably would have done so easily. But you know, he was targeting a specific time, and I give him tons of credit for having the guts to go for it. But there's a high failure rate in this sport, and I really don't want to be in that position, because it's so incredibly painful and emotionally trying. Even when things go perfectly,
right,
the sport's still really painful physically and emotionally. So I don't want to be in that position where I'm really blown up.
Right. Well, and I mean, I guess it also kind of goes back to something we talked about at the beginning, where, you know, it's such a long race and anything can happen. And you know, that easy pace is maybe the successful pace, because you've got to maintain it the whole way. And you know, maybe it's a little bit tougher in a 5K at a local event, when you're like, you know, maybe I can run with this person. And like, you know, you go out too hard on a 5K, and like, yeah, even if you blow up, you only got to maybe make it home a mile, as opposed to make it home 75 more miles if you go out too hard in 100. So maybe that's a little easier to dial it back and run your own thing, when you know just the magnitude of what's the challenges that is in front of you.
So yeah, I totally agree.
So anyway, Kyle, as we're getting to the point of wrapping this thing up today, the way I like to kind of end these conversations is with something that I call a philosophical question, which is just my fancy way of saying that I'm basically going to ask a pretty simple question, just like the introductory question, and just leave it very open-ended and allow you to answer it however you want. So for some folks, it's literally two or three words. For some folks, it's a few sentences. And some folks, you know, it's 8 or 10 minutes later, we're finally wrapping up the thought in all options are on the table, and all are certainly, you know, acceptable, and you know, you answer it however you want to answer it, and this is where we'll end things for today. But in your 6+ years of running, and you know, as you continue the progression, hopefully the progression upward continues to go for you, what has the sport of running and ultra running taught you about yourself that maybe, you know, a decade ago you didn't know at all, but because you've gotten into the sport and the lessons that, you know, I think running is a great teacher. So some of the lessons that maybe running has taught you, what's one or two things that maybe comes to mind as far as something that you've really been able to take from the sport in your time in it so far?
That's a great question, Danny. So something that I've learned about myself, I'll use something that I learned from 100 milers that really isn't a lesson that can get into it so deeply in any other time in my life, unless there's an emergency or a crisis or something incredibly stressful, just like a 100-miler is incredibly stressful on the body and the mind. And that is just learning how I can respond to other people and how I can be as a person who strives like everyone to be the best person I can be, and to be a nice, kind, good person, so to speak, something everybody tries to be, how I can do in that pursuit when I'm in times of extreme stress. So a 100-miler is a fascinating experience for exploring these aspects of oneself, because it's a completely artificial, controlled crisis. You put yourself into it, and you have escape routes the entire way. You can drop out of the race anytime. You have tons of people there to support you. In fact, you have people there bending over backwards, going out of their way to support you. And for me, the top person for that is always my wife. She's been there for me in my 100-milers. And so when I'm in this extremely difficult situation, and the fact that I can bail out doesn't change how it affects the way somebody feels and how it affects my consciousness, for all intents and purposes, my body is going through a time of crisis. It's an emergency. Right. And so when I see my wife or my crew at an aid station or along the course, or if I just see volunteers at the aid station, or I see my competitors or, you know, friends who I'm running with on the course, it's how am I going to treat other people when I'm stressed out myself? And sometimes I'm really proud of myself for how I do. I will have it in me to put on a smile and to give my wife a kiss and make a quick joke or do something positive, or mostly express my gratitude for how awesome it is that I get to be doing this incredible thing that not that many people get to do. And all the training time it took to get to that point, and all the sacrifices that not just that I made, but that she made for me to be able to do that, in terms of picking up my slack with housework or parenting or, you know, whatever. And so when I'm in that moment, can I find it within myself to still have empathy and kindness and compassion and feel for the other people around me? Or will I just be completely self-focused and completely only caring about myself? So when you're past mile 80 of a 100-miler, you really feel like the entire universe revolves around you and your suffering and your mission, your goal of just getting to that finish line. So when you're in the most self-centered moment of your entire life, and again, unless I face some actual real emergency, which I've been lucky that I really haven't had anything that's put me into this state, in my adult life. And, you know, everybody's had times of crisis and panic, but for me, the ones that stand out most are these artificial ones that I put my own self into. And anyway, it gives me this opportunity to explore, how am I going to react when a real crisis happens, or when I'm at a moment where I'm only caring about myself? Will I have it in me to be a good person to others as well? And so, as I said, sometimes I've been proud of myself how I did, and other times I'm pretty disappointed that ultimately I just didn't have it in me to care about anybody but myself in that moment.
Right. That's something that I think, it can happen in shorter distances as well. There's probably been a few times at mile 23, 22, 23, 24 of a marathon where, if I was honest, I don't think maybe I'd be proud of myself for some of the, aid stations or this or that or the other that maybe I've reacted as well. So a great reminder and a great lesson that, we, no matter what, and especially like you said, these man-made or these self-inflicted stress situations, we need to be sure to be caring about the people around us as well. So the great lesson and great insight, and thank you for sharing that, Kyle. Again, guys, you want to connect with Kyle on the Twitter at Kyle Pietari, again, Pietari, on Instagram at KSP303. We'll have those things linked up and anything else, some links and some we talked about books and races and all that kind of stuff. We'll have all those things linked up as well. Dizruns.com/452 to get to the show notes for this episode. Kyle, thank you for taking the time today. Thanks for making this happen. I certainly appreciate it. And looking forward to whatever the future holds for you, and looking forward to continuing to follow along and hopefully, certainly wishing you nothing but success as you continue. So thanks for joining us today, and all the best going forward, my friend.
Thank you so much, Dane. Sorry, I was kind of long-winded on some of those answers, especially that last one. It's been great talking to you, great exploring my own mindset, and thank you so much for doing the show.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Kyle and myself, and as per usual, I would be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your biggest takeaway? For me, there were several, as there usually is, but one of the things that Kyle mentioned, and I commented on it immediately because it stood out to me so much, and it's still probably my biggest takeaway from this episode, is the opportunities we have to maybe add an extra mile or two here and there really don't cost us that much time, but they definitely benefit us. You remember back when Kyle talked about how long it takes to get dressed and ready and out the door to run 1 mile, and then if you're going to add a second mile or a third mile to that, it only takes the time of doing that 1 or 2 miles. And I'd never thought of it that way, but like I said when we were talking, it is entirely true. I mean, it takes, it takes me as long to get my shoes on, get my watch synced up, get the dog on the leash, get my shorts on, all of that. So that takes as much time as doing, a mile or more sometimes. So with that in mind, once we get out the door, it only takes an extra 9, 10, 11, 12 minutes, whatever your pace is, to do an extra mile or an extra mile and a half or 2 miles or whatever the case may be. And, when it comes to our training, when it comes to building our base, which I talk about somewhat often with you guys and until I'm blue in the face with my clients, the importance of having that solid base of fitness, it's those easy miles, those random extra 1 mile here, 2 miles there, that really makes a huge, huge difference in our fitness, in our, ability to avoid injury, to our durability, I guess is maybe the word I'm looking for there. And it all just comes down to those base miles. And if we can just add in an extra mile or two here and there, it really does make a difference. So keep that in mind when you think you're busy, and you are busy. I'm busy. You're busy. All of us are busy. Kyle's busy. But just remember that, the time it takes to get outside and do 1 mile or 2 miles, is one thing. But if we want to add on just an extra mile here or there, an extra half a mile or whatever, it doesn't take that much more time, but it definitely has a benefit. It definitely has an impact. It definitely helps us more so than we might think. And for that little bit of extra time commitment, isn't that big of a commitment, really, because we already have our shoes on. We're already out the door. We're already doing our thing. Add that extra 5-10 minutes here and there, it does make a difference. So that was my big takeaway. What was it for you? let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/452, and leave a comment there. And that way other folks can see what you had to say and maybe see something from a different perspective, through a different lens than what they did. When they were first listening to this episode. So that about wraps it up. Once again, runningshoesguru.com. Thank you to them for supporting this episode. And if you're listening to this timely enough, get yourself entered into the drawing to get yourself a free pair of the Saucony Ride 10s. This episode is going out on the 14th of July. The drawing will be up, I believe, on about the 19th of 14th of July. I said 14th of July. I'm an idiot. 14th of August, 2017. The drawing will be concluded, and a winner will be announced, I believe, on the 19th of August. So get yourself entered if you're listening to this during that window. And if you're not, you can still head over to runningshoesguru.com/giveaways at any time. And if there's a current giveaway going, get yourself entered. And just FYI, if you've entered before, you do have to re-enter each month to stay eligible for this particular drawing. So thanks to runningshoesguru.com again for sponsoring this episode. And that's it. That's it. Let's put a bow on this thing. Thank you guys for listening. Hope that you enjoyed this episode. And again, always love to hear your feedback. So let me know. And until next time, take care and we'll talk soon. See you guys.